And this is Morning Edition on KASU Jonesboro. Good morning. I'm Mark Smith. Joining us by phone this morning is Congresswoman Joanne Emerson, who represents Southeast Missouri's 8th Congressional District. Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well. It's been a while since we talked last. We took a break for the holiday season. Now back for our first talk of the new year. I know December was a busy time, Congress trying to reach some end-of-the-year agreements, one of which was a two-month extension on the payroll tax cut. This is going to last until the end of February. It was meant to, as a way to add just a little bit more take-home pay to the average worker's check by simply withholding a little less. Why is there a problem with this, and what's likely to occur with this debate in the future?
Well, the problem really had to do with how to pay for it, and because the administration wanted to impose higher taxes on those who make over a certain amount of money, which also includes small businesses, I might add. The Republicans wouldn't go along with that, and as a result, they couldn't come to a conclusion. I believe, however, that they're working very closely now to try to undramatically deal with this issue, and so at the moment I'm feeling optimistic that we'll figure out how to get it paid for, and it's what's really interesting is that in past years when we've had a tax cut, Congress has not generally paid for it, but they're doing their very best to make this neutral as far as budgeting goes, just so that we can really start getting more and more savings out of and help pay down our deficit and our debt.
Well, of course, Congress back in session now. It is an election year. That means there are rather low expectations on what might get accomplished this year.
Well, I think that's traditionally the case, and it's very troubling to me because we do have a responsibility to get our work done and get it done in a timely fashion, regardless of whether or not it's an election year. But you know, the president goes out on the stump, and that then forces the Congress to somehow, or at least the leadership feels somewhat compelled to get into the politics of it. And, you know, it's too bad. We really have a lot to do. We will have the appropriations process, which I'm very proud to say we actually did get through last year. It was those of us who sit on appropriations who really had to do most of the heavy lifting all year, and I suspect it's going to be the same this year as well. We do anticipate getting our appropriations bills done even earlier so they don't get caught up in election year politics. There is a cap at which we have to, we can't spend over that cap, and that's a good thing to start the year with, knowing that, you know, this is only how much we can spend, and hopefully we can find some more cuts. We were able last year, at least in my specific bill dealing with financial services, we were $4.5 billion below the president's budget request and 11% below previous years. So we did some very strategic cutting, and it was hard cuts. And that's what we need to keep doing until we can get control of the cost of government.
I saw a recent poll that shows that 84% of Americans disapprove of the job that Congress is doing. We have a climate in which office holders are continually fundraising and campaigning for the next election, it seems like, and lobbyists and special interests are wielding a lot of influence. And then you have the problem of while Americans seem to disapprove of the job Congress is doing, they're also strongly divided over what it is exactly they want Congress to do.
Well, there's no doubt that seeing the partisanship and people smacking each other in the news media combined with 24-hour news cycles and social media, more people are engaged, more people are paying attention to what's going on in the Congress. I dare say that, quite frankly, you have state legislatures who are controlled by one party who have as much, if not more, dysfunction than we do on the federal level, which is really sad. But at the end of the day, you know, we have divided government. The Republicans are in charge of the House of Representatives, the Democrats are in charge of the U.S. Senate, and the Democrats are in charge of the administration. So when you only have one half of one-third of the government, we cannot generally get 100% of what we want, but we have been very successful in getting, you know, maybe 75 to 80% of what we want, which in the current climate I think is significant, but we do have some people on both sides of the aisle who believe that you cannot compromise, and that just adds to the negative feelings that people have. I think most people believe that you have to negotiate, you have to come to some kind of consensus for the common good as opposed to your own personal good, and that's my philosophy. Listen, you know, we did some significant cuts, as I said earlier, in my appropriations bill, and that was after very, very heated negotiations with my Senate counterpart, and you know, we were able to find some common ground. Was it perfect? No, but it certainly was a vast improvement over the way that the Congress has done business in the past. And it's really, I think it's really too bad. But the national news media, Mark, does a really good job of fanning the fires, if you will, and particularly radio talk shows and social media, and there's a lot of misinformation out there, and people tend to believe the misinformation, and all of which adds up to having very negative feelings about Congress. But I think people also believe that because we're fighting and not getting as much done as we should, that's why they're so unhappy, and I don't blame them.
Well, and job creation and helping the middle class are sure to be issues in this election year. Republican candidates from the president to race on down are going to face accusations that they pander to ultra-wealthy contributors and industries that care more about profits than American jobs or the American economy. How do you counter that argument?
Well, first of all, if you look at, you know, there are several root causes for the lack of greater job creation than you see going on right now. I mean, there are jobs being created, but not at the rate that I think they should be. But this has been, and I don't even mean to be political here, but trying to deal with this administration on the regulatory side of things, the rules that the Environmental Protection Agency puts into place with regard to boilers, with regard to cement production, with regard to a lot of manufacturing, makes it very, very difficult for those companies to do business, because in order to meet some of these regulations, they've got to make investments of $1 billion in order to meet the standards EPA sets. Well, you know, if you have to invest $1 billion in a year or two off your bottom line, I mean, that is gigantic, and it's very significant. And so they can't add people because they have to meet some ridiculously tight regulation that does nothing but discourage job creation. On the tax side of things, there's no doubt in my mind that we have to do some huge lifting with regard to reforming the tax code, both on the personal and on the corporate level. And there's so much uncertainty out there that it's very hard for any kind of company to make decisions, and that's why it would be to the benefit of everybody, both parties, and heaven forbid that, you know, we would help both parties, but there is a real need to work on this together so that we can, in fact, give certainty to companies to create those jobs that we so desperately need in this country. And you know, the special interests, really, you know, I don't find the special interests impact on the federal level nearly as much as they do at the state level, but that's just my own observation. And at the end of the day, though, it's really the tax code and the very difficult regulatory climate under which the United States operates, which is troublesome. You can look at the whole issue of energy and the Keystone Pipeline, which is a very, very important means by which we can create, you know, over 100,000 jobs. You know, some people say a million. I don't know. Let's just say permanently maybe 100,000 jobs. And building this new pipeline from Canada all the way down to the Gulf Coast in Texas, to me, it makes absolute good sense to do that. It's a long-term project, but one which will create a lot of jobs as we go along. And the Canadians, who I believe are more green, if you will, than the United States, you know, can't understand this, and they're going to build their own other pipeline, so that they become more energy independent. And this is something that is a win-win for everybody, and certainly, you know, something over which we shouldn't be having ridiculous arguments. But unfortunately, this is part of the reason that whole tax extension and tax lower tax extension got messed up over the holidays.
Well, of course, that the whole BP oil spill disaster in the Gulf has made a lot of people shy of any oil pipeline anywhere now.
And well, we're talking about natural gas. This is different.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
and
different.
And there may be a misunderstanding about that, too. You know.
Well, there's a lot of misunderstandings about things, and, you know, it's very hard to correct the record. I mean, we have folks, I mean, there are folks, all of my colleagues comment about this, but, you know, there are a lot of people who, through social networking, they say, well, here's this email I got, and, you know, this person said this happened, and so this happened. And in order to try to either refute or correct the record, if you will, is not always as easy as one thinks, because there are certain entertainers on television and the radio who say things for effect as opposed to whether or not it's true. And unfortunately, that becomes what people perceive to be the truth, and it's very interesting, because I love having open and great opportunities to get information, but I do have to caution that you really have to look at both sides and really do your research before you believe one party or the other.
Well, there's legislation in the headlines today. The English version of Wikipedia has gone dark today. Google is displaying a black box over its logo on its main page. Some other websites are doing similar displays. It's a kind of a 24-hour silent protest against the Stop Online Piracy Act. These bills, this and another similar bill, are meant to address a real problem. They sound like a good idea, but there are some serious concerns about the scope of the bills.
There are some big concerns that speech would be impacted. That and quite frankly, I think I haven't read the PIPA bill, which is the Senate. They call that the Senate bill, and the Stop Online Privacy Act here on the House side. You know, I think there are a lot of problems, and they've been done because there is counterfeiting. There's no doubt about it, and there are illegal websites up, and you know, people, for example, who really are desperately in need of prescription drugs, for example, but can't afford them, even through any kind of help program that you might get in the with the government. Those people will purchase things not from legitimate online pharmacies, but from illegal ones, and I think this is one of the responses, this SOPA bill, to deal with that. Unfortunately, they've gone way beyond the where they should, and so it's going to require a whole lot of work. I'm not even sure it's going to come to the House floor, at least not in the condition it is right now.
Mm-hmm. So you think there's enough people who realize that there are major problems?
Yeah, and I think the grassroots has done a really good job talking to members. I've heard a lot from my constituents, both on Facebook and through the mail, and this is a big problem, and I certainly couldn't support the bill as it is right now.
Well, it's only January, but spring planting season will be upon us before we know it, and spring rains are sure to come. What's the levee situation like in southeast Missouri?
Well, I will say that I'm very, very pleased that in the when we finished our appropriations bills for the year, we were actually able to get $875 million-ish devoted just to the Mississippi River and Tributaries Project, which should be enough money for the Corps to do all that it needs to do to shore up the levees, both on ours at Bird's Point, but certainly over on the Illinois and Kentucky side, because I believe now that the Corps has enough money to get our levee back up to the 62.5 feet. Obviously, with the weather as it is today, it's a little bit hard to do that construction. But they do have the resources to bring us back up to 62.5 feet. The concern, of course, is that there is then undue pressure taking us up to 62.5, undue pressure on Kentucky and Illinois, and they're still trying to purchase some right-of-way from those states so that they can make needed repairs over there and do that simultaneous to taking us up to 62.5 feet. But they got the money to do it, so there's no excuse now other than just getting the rest of this tended to over there in Kentucky and Illinois.
We have a listener, actually, who's an advocate for research into pancreatic cancer, and she's concerned about the future of federally funded research, particularly on this disease, in the current budget-cutting climate.
Well, I will tell you that the National Institutes of Health research monies were not reduced, or if they, I mean, I think that, I don't think there were any reductions in research per se. I think they might have flat funded them, but it's not, but I don't know, I can't remember significantly, but I do not believe there were huge cuts at all to research. And so that will go on. Certainly, it, I know that there are also privately funded through some universities research as well. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of all coordinated through the, in many cases, through the drug companies. But the NIH, people were very concerned about NIH research, not only for pancreatic cancer, which is just horrific, but, you know, all cancers and lots of diseases that have not seemed to have, because there aren't, you know, a huge number of people who get who are impacted by those diseases. Sometimes those research funds haven't been increased at all. But I think that both parties believe that certain, this kind of research into diseases and finding cures are it's just really critical.
Well, we got an interesting GOP presidential race. I don't have time to get into it right now. We're running out of time. I understand you got to meet some of your World Series champion, St. Louis Cardinals, at the White House this week, though.
Yes, we had the World Series Cardinals yesterday at the White House. It was just wonderful. I posted some pictures on Facebook. And I think among of the congressional delegation, I'm probably the biggest Cardinals fan. I actually adore the Cardinals and make big excuses why I can't do things when there's a Cardinals game on TV. But nonetheless, it was very exciting. It was sad not to have Albert Pujols there, but we certainly had David. We had David Freese, who was the MVP for the World Series, as you know, and I was talking to one of the players' wives saying, hey, because, you know, I have a daughter his age, so asking if he had a girlfriend yet. And she said, no, it wasn't for the lack of women trying. He's probably very discerning. Such a nice guy, but they're really, the players are just regular people. It's interesting. There were two or three of them I really didn't recognize without their uniforms on, because you're used to see them in a ball cap, and so they look different. But, boy, they're young. I mean, when you consider how old I am, and I consider myself young, too, they really seem young. But it was a big treat, and, you know, they do wonderful things. They were at Walter Reed, Bethesda Naval Medical Center, with some of our wounded warriors, and you know, they do very special things, not only for our returning soldiers, but also to help out in communities, whether it's helping in Joplin, Missouri, after the tornado. So they give back an awful lot, and they're just great people, and I'm sure proud of them.
We've gone a little bit over time. I want to go ahead and ask you a little bit about the GOP presidential race.
Mm-hmm.
Candidates have slowly winnowed down. Are we getting ready to settle on Mitt Romney? Or
I really don't know. I know that there is some pushback, you know, among a lot of the real conservative members of our party for an alternative candidate, and I guess we'll see how well Romney does in the South Carolina primary this Saturday. And if, in fact, he does very well, then we may see another couple of candidates drop out. And I think this is not abnormal. It's something that happens regardless of what party it is, as you start winnowing down the candidates. And whoever our candidate is, I'm sure that people will all rally behind him and do their very best to ensure that they win in November.
South Carolina could be a make-or-break state for some of the candidates, though.
I think so, just because of the number of primaries and the need to have staff and field people on the ground and getting things organized. If you don't have the money to do it, it's really tough.
And, you know, one thing a lot of people have been commenting about, have you ever seen this many debates?
No, and I actually have watched a fair amount of them, and I'm telling, and it's really it's been interesting. I thought we were done, and then suddenly two more were happening this week. So, needless to say, sometimes it is over the top, but it does also give you a good sense of the candidates, and the dynamics change depending on who the moderators are. Mm-hmm. You know, the two in New Hampshire, the back-to-back ones, Saturday night and then the Sunday morning. I thought the Sunday morning on Meet the Press was far more interesting and more energetic than the one on Saturday night. And I guess it just depends really who's asking the questions and what types of questions they ask.
Well, it's definitely going to be an interesting year, and I want to thank you today for your time.
Thank you so much, Mark. You know, I will say this. It's really hard, though, in debates to get a sense of people as well. You can kind of get a sense of them, but, you know, to answer a question in 30 seconds or in a minute, it doesn't do justice, and so it's so soundbite-ish. I'm not sure that they serve that good a purpose.
Congresswoman Emerson, we're out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.